Hello, and welcome to Manga Splaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who haven't read manga before. Hosted by myself, David Brothers, Deb Aoki, Christopher Butcher, and Chip Zdarsky. Follow along with our show notes and reading list at mangasplaining.com, and check us out on Instagram, too. We put a lot of work into the different stories and photos and samples and things like that. And today, we are here to talk about Katsuhisa Kigetsu's Frankenfran. And rather than try to sum it up just off the top of my head, I'm going to read the back of the book like we've started doing on these episodes.
I think that's a great... We get to use all of the work the PR department has put together already.
Yeah, speaking of someone who has to write these back cover copy, like, I get it now. Meet Fran, the finest creation of the brilliant mad scientist Dr. Madaraki. When the good doctor goes missing, leaving Fran alone in the house full of stitched-up monsters and scientific equipment, who better to take up his scalpel? With a combination of enthusiasm, skill, and heart that just can't be beat, Fran wields mad science with a sunny disposition to solve the problems of the lonely, downtrodden, and lovelorn people who come through her door. But the people seeking help aren't always what they seem, and Fran's solutions are rarely what they expect. So, basically...
That's an understatement.
Yeah, right? So, Fran is essentially a Frankenstein. She's got the bolts in her head, you know, the stitching on her skin, that long smile from cheek to cheek. And she is apparently genius level surgeon in a book that's pretty much just gross out horror stories, pretty much wall to wall. And this was recommended to me by Christine Wong, part of like the Hello Boyfriend comics art collective or studio, whatever you call a group of people who make comics together. And she said it was gross, and I read it, and it was gross. And I think I liked it because it was gross. Like, there's something very, like, Richard Corbin-y 70s comics, but also 70s horror comics, like with the ironic fate to the different cast members in the comic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was pretty funny, but also it's not the sort of book that you can read more than one or two volumes in a row, I think. Which I think we'll find out a lot about that on this episode. But... let's go around the table. Chris first, then Deb, then Chip. Tell me how much of this you read and what you thought about it.
So first off, this book is out of print. I tried to get the print, the physical copy, and it is no longer available from Seven Seas, unfortunately. So I went and grabbed the digital, the volume one. It was printed in sort of two volume bind-ups, and I grabbed the digital volume one. And I actually just didn't have time to read volume two as well, because we are reading another book this week as well. We'll get to that after the break. But
you're so lazy.
Yeah. what do I want to say? I was kind of hoping I got to react to other people's reactions.
I'll say I chose you first because you kept calling it a sexy monster girl comic, and it's so
it is a sexy monster. Well, that's it. Okay, so here's the deal.
Yeah,
it is very much to me a takeoff on Tezuka's Blackjack, which is also in this format of sort of a story of the week about a weird medical thing and an unorthodox solution. Blackjack doesn't usually turn people into monsters, although the most contentious point of Blackjack for me is the introduction of Pinocchio, which is a little girl that he reassembles from parts and then is just annoying through the rest of the series. Like, any story with Pinocchio is instantly ruined for me, and it's actually what put me off Blackjack. So this is a whole manga of that, which is fascinating. I think the author's id is laid bare. Is the nicest thing I can say about this. It's just like, what if gruesome horror shit, but like a hot girl who is frequently naked and hot other girls who are frequently naked during surgery scenes and after surgery scenes are in this book? And at first I thought it was going to be, it's not that kind of book. They're just making the sexy covers, like the sexy monster girl stuff on the covers in order to sell copies to seinen fans, right? Because you got to have a little TNA for that kind of seinen book, right? Yeah, no, it's the author. It's all coming from the author. And the chapter that got me was the lady turned into the dog who was the spy. And it's like, you still gave her boobs when she's a dog lady. You still gave her pendulous boobs. This is not coming from editorial. This is coming from you. It is unlike anything I've read in manga, and it is good on those merits, but it is not for me, and I can't in good conscience recommend it to anybody. So that's how I felt about it.
Wow.
Literally anyone. There's so much going on in this that it is like, I'm not going to recommend this, but if you happen upon it and you just want to dig real deep down into some fucked up shit, here you go. This is the book for you, but it's not a recommendation.
Yeah. I will say this is the first episode where I was like, should I lead with a content warning because of all the cannibalism and guts?
Mm.
I don't think it was boobs. Cannibalism. There's lots of guts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deb, how did Frankenstein Fran strike you? Though I have a hunch.
Well, let me preface this by saying I just had coffee with a friend. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty jacked up right now. I had half a donut and a coffee, and I reread Frank and Fran, and it hit me in a really weird way. And I don't know if it's the coffee or it's something else, but I did definitely get what Chris was saying, that I see a lot of elements of other similar manga. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely its own creature. Horror manga is super popular now. And so I would see that Frank and Fran could find an audience, despite it being out of print, to be the next read for people who are really hungry for more horror manga. Mm-hmm. It is a very special combination of horror manga, though, because it is pretty fan service-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meaning fan service in the sense that it's got a fair amount of nudity that doesn't need to be there, mm-hmm. but it's also not very unhorny in that it's gross at the same time.
Yeah.
It's so gross. Like, it's like, ooh, boobs, and it's like, oh, but they're dismembered. It's like, oh, well, there went my boner, you know?
But also that's for somebody. This whole book is for somebody.
But, you know, I appreciate what Chris was just saying about the Blackjack. Like, one thing that's really interesting about Blackjack is that it's about if you're not familiar with Blackjack is about a surgeon, a rogue surgeon, who is extremely skilled, but almost skilled to the point of being unethical and borderline, like, doing crimes against God by by reanimating people or doing really... like, whoa, no, you shouldn't do that to a body kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's very fantastical. But Blackjack comes from an interesting place because Tezuka went to medical school. He is a doctor, you know, in a lot of ways. And he's aware of a lot of medical things. And it seems like the author of Frankenfran did some similar research. Like, there is every now and then there's little flashes of, like, you know, anatomical or interesting things about the body. Mm-hmm. Or real diseases, and then he uses that as a jumping off point to tell stories that are basically body horror stories. One thing I think he does really well is there are a lot of twists in this story like you turn the page and go, whoa, what the fuck? I did not see that coming. You know, like, I think, like, there's one, like, there's a story, chapter 2, I think, where you think, oh, there's a happy ending, you know, and then you turn the page and it's like, oh no, there's not.
The caterpillar story, right?
Dang. So there's things about it, like Junji Ito does body horror, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Animorphs is basically body horror. NPD Psycho is body horror. I mean, there's, if you like any of those books, or even like old style horror comics that, like, DCA used to put out, like House of Mystery. Mm-hmm. Like, there's these self-contained short stories that are like comeuppance theater, right? The evil, the selfish, the vain, think they want something, and then that their wish gets turned against them in a way that, if you like seeing evil, vain, selfish people get their comeuppance in a really horrifying way, this book's for you.
Nice.
What'd you think?
You
didn't sound too jacked up there.
Oh,
yeah, it was very even.
Yeah, that was super even. I expect you to just go off on this.
Extremely eloquent. I thought you were going to go full Joe Rogan.
I need more coffee.
Because she knows what she's talking about. That's the difference.
Yeah, I see.
Bam. So, I mean, I found this book fascinating. First, I'm gonna start right off with the cover, which is kind of my what the fuck. Like, why are these the covers for this? Like, I know we've talked a bit about how, you know, there's obviously some sexy stuff and boobs and everything, but like the covers make it seem like a lot more than that. Mm-hmm. Like there's no way if I was a fan of like horror, I would pick this up. I would just think that this is like, just like a sexy Frankenstein book, which it's not. It's a horror. So I think that's just a wild mismatch. But it's, I actually really like the main character. Like nice. Fran, like I think she's just like a fascinating mixture of things. I like the weird tics that they've given her, and her kind of very strange outlook on life and morals, and what her kind of weird mission statement is. Like you keep trying to look kind of past that to see like, does she know she's screwing with people, right? or is she just she's fascinated with like operating on people. His bodies, but is she also fascinated with doing that with their minds? Like that's just kind of the thing that I kept coming to. So I think she's really interesting, and her like companion, the hunky dude with the body of, is it a dog or a cat? I think it's a dog.
It's a cat.
It's a cat.
That's weird. Because,
I thought it was
like,
a dog too.
I know, because there's the other character with the dog head and the human body. I just assumed they were just like switched around, but anyways. He's a fascinating sidekick, the kind of island of Dr. Moreau of this lab and the building that she lives in is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also really into, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of the episodic manga, and I find this fascinating because it's like a procedural. Like I felt like this is like, this is like a TV show where like she's got to kind of solve the problem. But then there's also that twist, and you're right earlier about like the twist being really interesting. Like I was always like, oh wow, that's pretty good. All that to say, yeah, what's up with like the sexiness combined with the horror? Like I enjoyed the first volume for what it was, and by the second volume, I'm like, okay, I don't know if I need to read past this. The only element that made me think that I'd want to kind of keep reading was the introduction of Veronica at the end of volume two.
Her sister.
Yeah. Cause that was interesting. Her actually having kind of an opposite to her, because up to that point, just like kind of a rotating crew of like random people with problems. So part of me kind of wants to keep reading just to find out more about that character, but I also suspect we're not going to find out much more about that character, because it doesn't seem like the kind of book that's going to be about kind of revelations of, you know, the inner workings of the cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the gross stuff is the gross stuff. I'm not a horror guy, but I thought it was really well done and well drawn.
It was revolting.
It was revolting. And, you know, I appreciated the kind of the weird, like, the anatomy kind of very medical diagrammatic stuff, which was kind of super funny to me. It's almost like a horror version of like the Marvel Universe handbook where they're trying to explain these things, even though
I was thinking of what the font while I was reading this.
Oh, really? Why did you think of what the font, by the way?
Because, I mean, the things she's explaining are nonsense. You know, like you can fit most of a body inside of a human skull or whatever, but it's presented in a way that it's like absolute fact.
Yeah.
And she's explaining to the reader and to the her poor victims as time goes on. It's like semi explainer manga. Like there's like a little bit of explainer in there to make the horror even creepier.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of reminds me of Delicious in Dungeon too. Like when they're talking about the recipes for the things, it's still fantastical creatures, but they're making it seem like, well, this is exactly how you prepared this meal that doesn't exist.
Yeah, like the cosmetic surgery chapter where she gives the entire skull a makeover, essentially.
Yeah.
Like it starts with a very reasonable, like, oh, I want, like, take care of my eyebrow fold. It's like one stitch, it's easy. And by the end, there's like people who are 8 feet tall because they want to be taller and things like that.
Yeah.
But it, like the horns and stuff like that, it's like,
yeah.
Like, wow, that reminds me of San Francisco when there was the body modification was a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd believe it. Because you mentioned Blackjack earlier. Blackjack's absolutely a touchstone, but this feels almost like Blackjack plus Kitaro.
Yes. I wrote down Kitaro too.
Yeah, there's a be careful what you wish for kind of vibe.
And also
all
of
this.
The eyeball trauma that's in this book. I forgot to mention, I have a thing about eyes and like seeing movies where eyes get poked or like looked at for too long. It makes my eyes actually water.
because of like getting a paper cut on my eye when I was a kid.
Did you really?
Yeah, it sucked. It was in art class.
Holy crap.
Hated art ever since.
It's fair.
I'm sorry.
But so some of this horror was very effective on me, despite not being necessarily what scares me. It's just like that visceral reaction. Yeah.
The eye thing is fascinating because, like, when I was in school for illustration, the main illustration teacher really stressed to us that in our drawings, in the composition, never have anything kind of pointing towards an eye.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of like a tangent thing. Like, you just don't want, like, even a background line or whatever that kind of goes towards the eye, because they're like, it'll make people uncomfortable because people have a thing about eyes. So you would always try and, like, avoid that unless you were trying to make them uncomfortable.
Were there a bunch of like EC horror comics that like focused on eye trauma, you know, on the cover?
So much eye trauma in EC horror comics.
But this has that same kind of weird outlaw feel where it's gross and outside of the mainstream, but it's also kind of, it's like a mainstream story told in a gross way.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's not really anything in here that's too strange if it was less, you know, like gutsy.
Yeah.
Like the doctor like helping people out, the rogue doctor stuff. But when it's like, oh, I found this guy, he loves this lady, like we caught him killing her in a park, so we're going to bring them back to life. Like, that's just a horror story. Like, it's totally normal.
Yeah.
But bringing her back to life is just a head, and then giving the head hands, and then just this whole shaggy dog joke to the end of it.
Yeah.
Definitely a sick mind.
This is definitely an inventive manga. There's a lot of twists in here that I've never seen before. Or like it's very much set up so that when you turn the page, there's a whoa.
Yeah, almost every page.
Yeah, it's impressive for that.
I feel like that kind of plotting, like it's easy to go like, what's the most unlikely thing that could happen? But I think this book actually kind of, the surprises are logical when you look back at them.
Mm.
Like she's a caterpillar. Of course she's going to turn into another form and it's going to be different. And you're like, oh, well, it's a human now, but no, it's actually like a bug, and now she's eating the guy in the love hotel.
Yeah, that's like one of the early stories, and it had my favorite ending, maybe of all of the stories that we've read so far.
Yeah.
Just those last few panels where I got it here, where the guy goes, can I touch you? This is awesome. You look almost like my favorite movie ever. And there's like this tiny, tiny, tiny panel that you can barely kind of make out of, like, it looks like Jaws eating somebody and the kids watching. Like, it's such a weird tiny panel, like you almost miss it.
Yeah.
And then the guy goes, take those jaws and gobble me up, you little pervert. Oh yeah, this rules. Like, it's just it's such a funny scene.
That was also my favorite. That's at the end of volume one, I think. It's part of the like Tales of Evil short stories.
Yeah.
Or no, maybe it's volume two. So that was something else I wanted to ask about, actually, was the two-page horror shorts at the back of the book. What did you guys think of those, other than Chip, who loves them like I do?
Yeah, they were so weird. I love them.
They were very weird, and I didn't love them.
I love them because they were weird, because like you kind of had to kind of piece it together a little bit, and sometimes it was just, instead of a story, it was a feeling.
Sometimes it didn't work.
It's just giving you a feeling. I'm like, well, that's an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You said some didn't work for you, Chris?
I feel like I'm actually going to be more absolute than that. Some of them don't actually just don't work. But some of them, I will say some of them didn't work for me. Yeah, it seems a little bit, I guess, they seem pointless. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe it is, maybe what Chip is saying is true. Maybe it's just like, oh, it's about a feeling. Like, the first one is like the two girls that are walking, school girls that are walking by, and there's flowers, and the guy's like, oh, this is weird, but they're both like corpses or whatever. And it's like, but it's never clearly, if that's the corpses of the girls that the people are leaving flowers for at this post, that's never clearly tied together. So this is on page, I don't know what page is this. So on page 193. So it's a dude in a trench coat and a hat who looks like he's supposed to be something, because that's not an everyday
character look.
Walking through. Yeah, right? And then there's like some flowers, a toy, a photo left at this one spot on the road. Maybe there's a traffic accident or something like that.
But then these two girls walk up and they've kind of like covered in blood, and you see them close and they are corpses. They're like the walking dead. They are missing their eyes. This guy is very scared. They just walk by. That's the end of the story. It's like, were these the girls that were tied, like that were there because it was never tied together? Is it that they're haunting this space? Who is this guy who has a really main character hat on? Like, all of it just didn't come together enough. The next one, which is Out of Body, which is just like the girl sneaks into his room to cut his dick
that was
off.
Really funny.
It's like, well, at least that's like that, like, you know, makes you like a little tense, let's say, but doesn't resolve.
It feels like non sequiturs, doesn't it? Like,
they really,
I think that's what they were meant to be, like omake content. Because the guy in the first story with the hat, he's in volume two. Like, him and the girl with the eye patch are recurring characters in these little shorts. Because he sees a ghost banging on the wall and like saying, like, open up, mom, I'm sorry, open up. And then it cuts to the ghost's head just going away. It's just jaws and up, which is very gross. And he looks around and he's like, this town is one messed up place. What on earth happened here?
Yeah,
I think he's just a rando. Like, he's just there to see these horrible things and to be like, huh. But I do think you're right. Some of these don't work as jokes.
No.
I almost would say these aren't tales of evil. These are tales of random.
Yeah.
Once after the first couple, once I realized that, then I got into them more, I think. Like, once you're just like, you're not waiting or expecting a thing. It's just like, oh, that's a cool drawing and a weird feeling. And like,
the zombies that yell help are like, it's a great joke.
It's a great joke.
I feel like I would cry if I saw it in a movie or something.
Yeah, yeah. That's the next zombie craze right there. Zombies are screaming help.
But like the one that Chip and I mentioned with the face and like, you know, gobble me up. That's a reference to a Japanese legend of the lady, the slip-mouthed woman, where she walks around and says, hey, am I pretty? And if you say no, like, she murders you.
Yeah.
You say yes, she murders you, because that's how these work.
Yeah.
And so the punchline is like, this kid is a for real pervert, and she's very surprised. Like, this has never happened. And take those jaws and gobble me up. It's just such, it kills me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The translation.
Calling him a pervert. Oh, that's great.
Who translated this book, by the way?
Was Jocelyn Allen doing translation and Chunky Whiteside on adaptation.
Interesting.
So yet again, chased by our friends.
So I'm wondering whose decision, like, because Fran's got that interesting kind of like, every once in a while she gets caught on a letter, you know, where I didn't know, like, if that was in the initial text.
There was probably something like it in the initial. There was probably like, there's a way that she's supposed to, like, she's supposed to be a teen girl. Like, she even goes to high school for one chapter. So I feel like that's like a hanging on your syllables kind of thing. And I think that's maybe what that's like. Maybe there's like a Japanese way to write that I am not familiar with.
What kind of like, they go, nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
Like, isn't that right? It's like Valley Girl.
Yeah, I didn't read it as Valley Girl. I read it as like a weird kind of like something wrong with her.
Oh.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, because I've never in all the books we've read, I've never kind of come across that. So because it's specifically this like stitched together Frankenstein girl, I just kind of thought it was some kind of weird catch that she has, that she gets stuck like a computer.
I found a Japanese version of the first page while we were chatting.
Ah.
And it's basically just like the squiggle that they used to indicate trailing off.
Okay. Well, there you go. We did manga explain something successfully. Another good episode.
there was one other kind of thing in the series that I was kind of interested in, which is, you know, people always talk about like kind of art versus artist, like is what's being portrayed in the story, the author's beliefs. And there's a one thing that struck me was the splash page of the planet Earth. Which, you know, I forget what page it was. I got a screen grab of it, but it's her kind of explaining kind of, I guess, what she does. And the text on it is just like, it's just the Earth, the moon, the sun. And she says, human beings are not an alien element polluting the world. They're the only living things that can actively shape the raw material of the Earth. To do that, the advancement of science through experiments is key. And the most important experiments are done to improve the happiness of all. which is really, I mean, it kind of hit me in a weird spot because I just went through a heat wave of record highs here in British Columbia caused by global warming, caused by mankind. But it was interesting because it's like, it's a cool insight into her character, but because the author devoted like this kind of space to it, made it feel almost like this is also their belief. Like it's because it's not just her being weird, kind of tossing this off. It's almost like a declaration.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you guys picked up on that vibe too.
Yeah. I was really thinking about that because there's a lot of gross things that happen. And I think the author is definitely someone who's like runs towards like the nastiness, like it's entertaining or, you know, whatever. Yeah. It clicks for them somehow, I should say. But there are so many bits where they could have gone mean or punched down or something like that, and they didn't, despite still being, like, very gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the school story, for instance, where the punchline is, like, they switch genders because the girl is afraid of men, and the guy loves her so much, he's like, I will become a woman for you. Yeah. And I'm like, this could very easily be, like, super gross and transphobic, but it's so enthusiastic and positive.
Yeah.
And still, like, an incredibly dumb joke.
I thought it was kind of like a twisted version of The Gift of Magi, where...
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a funny page of them just pulling open their outfits to reveal their fully nude bodies.
Yeah. And there's, like, one single panel strip later in the book that says they broke up because one of them cheated on each other.
What?!
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, at the very end.
He can't let anyone have a happy ending, can he?
Right?
That's pretty funny.
And this is the sort of thing where it could have been very horrible, and it's still very edgy. Like, it's not necessarily a joke that you want to tell to someone you just met, but I think it passes the sniff test of, like, who is this being mean to? And it's not really being mean to anybody. It's just being weird to everybody.
That story in particular is, like, it's not a story. It's a sketch. It's like a sketch of like an idea that's like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if Frankenfan just like gave people their heart's desires of cosmetic surgery? And then she does, and then it ends. And it's like the author tries really hard to tack on a thing like, well, I guess they're all mature young adults. They totally knew what they were doing, and they have horns or whatever. You're supposed to be a little horrified, but it's not a story. Like, it's all middle. There's no conclusion. It doesn't build to anything. It's just like these little sketches that happen. And it's like, it's really interesting. It's really interesting that this exists, but it's also why it's not something I would be like, yeah, you should totally check this out. Uzumaki does the same thing, but Uzumaki in a chapter, or if it's a multi-chapter story, gives you a beginning, middle, and end for every chapter. It's like something gross happens, something fucked up happens. These characters are dealing with this horrible thing, and there's some kind of resolution at the end of the chapter, and then the characters move forward until the story completes. This, like, there's a lot of, like, it's very gross. Horror isn't my thing at the best of times, to be honest. So, like, maybe there's a nuance that someone who's really into horror would pick up. Like, I get that sex and death is all that horror is about, so the sex and death stuff makes perfect sense in that regard. But, like, literally, the last story is, like, shot like a porno, but it's her being dismembered. It's uncomfortable, and it's just, like, I get... it. I get it all. I think it's really interesting that this is a thing that went for 8 volumes and the sequel is currently running in the same magazine. It just keeps going.
Somebody loves it.
I don't
see them making an anime adaptation of this anytime soon. I'll say that.
It would just be all
I totally can see that. Almost all the time.
Easiest animation ever.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is like, it just doesn't feel like, it feels like yaoi. Not BL, but like literal yaoi.
Like yaoi.
Like it's literally just, like it's just a buildup signifying nothing. Like it does it, like nothing matters at the end. We're just doing some crazy shit and you're not going to get a beginning, no middle, no end, no point, no whatever, whatever yaoi actually stands for. I'll put it in the show notes. But it's just like this idea that this is like, I guess we got to tack on something of a message. Like maybe young people shouldn't make decisions about their decisions about plastic surgery when they're still in high school. Like, But that's weak as hell. That is like the weakest sentence at the end of that story.
I don't know. Most of these have some sort of like, if not moral, there's like a meaning to the story. Yeah, like, and they all have beginning, middles, and ends. Like the beginning is somebody approaches her because they've got a problem. She solves the problem. There's a twist to it, and now they're fucked. The end. And it's usually their hubris or like there's something.
And if she had Yelp reviews, no one would show up.
Yeah.
Right? Because then they'd all know what they're getting into. But apparently nobody does know what they're getting into.
I think the Junji Ito comparison is pretty good because mm-hmm. Junji Ito's the prestige TV version of this.
Yeah.
Like this, this is straight up episodic. Right. This is Seinfeld, where sometimes it just ends on a joke. You know, it's just Jerry saying hello and bam.
Yeah.
But Ito is very much, he's making horror novels. Well, these are almost horror jokes or sketches, like you said earlier.
Yeah.
But I agree, Chip, that the covers didn't do it any favors as far as finding the right readers.
Yeah.
Like, Seven Seas, admittedly, they have a very broad array of stuff, but one of their subgenres of what they publish is Monster Girls. Like Monster Musume, which is basically like monster girls who are like harem manga, right? Like the hapless protagonist is surrounded by these monster girls. And they're not very horrifying. They're just kind of weird, right? It's like the equivalent of like a guy surrounded by a bunch of goth girls, like except they have extra appendages. But
the Sandman?
Yeah, so it's kind of made like, hey, weirdo girls, but they're sexy. And so that's what Frankenfriend looks like from the cover. And that's what I thought it was. And then to find out it's actually a horror manga with a really strange black sense of humor makes me think like it missed an opportunity. Like maybe they should have redesigned the covers or something to help it find its audience.
The covers are doubly weird because it's Frankenfriend on both of these covers that's nude. Mm. But she's like the character in the books that is... I'm not saying she's a never nude, but she's like, she's not sexualized in that manner. Like,
no, she's not.
She's like always fully clothed. She's always just like the mad scientist doctor character, and the people she's operating on are usually the ones that are, you know, disrobed and, you know, titillating to a certain segment of the audience. But the covers are just like, what? Like,
yeah,
like, I don't get them at all.
And they were the same covers as the Japanese edition. Actually, the U.S. edition font, or the North American font, or logo, rather, is much more playful than the Japanese logo looks.
Yeah.
And that's Japanese, a conscious decision, like, right?
It's very normal, yeah. So I've looked past this book for like quite a long time until Christine finally said, hey, check this out, it's weird. And I was like, all right, I like weird, let's go. And it delivered. How do you feel about the watercolor, color pencil-looking title pages?
On page 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask, because it's like, I actually think that this book might have found its audience if this had been the cover. Instead, it is out of print less than 4 years after it was published. So I think that that's a big deal.
I think these drawings get more and more explicit as the series goes on, is one trouble, though.
The watercolory ones?
Yeah.
I've only got number 1 here. I'm sorry, I didn't see number 2.
Oh, yeah, let me take a look at number 2, because I'm seeing the number 1, and it's just...
Volume
it's
like, 3 has one.
Volume 2 doesn't?
Volume 2 doesn't, volume 3 does.
That Frankenfriend on volume 1, it looks like something that a high school kid would draw in art class that would horrify the teacher and have them call their parents.
I think that's the exact appeal of this book.
Yeah.
It's this one, right?
Yeah, that one. That.
Yeah, it is... absolutely horrible. It is one of the worst pieces of art I've ever seen. This is terrible. I don't understand why this is a thing I run into constantly. Like, I actually don't mind the rendering on the covers themselves, the kind of the computery stuff.
Yeah.
Volume 1 isn't that good. Volume 2 featuring the two nude women is better rendering. Mm-hmm. But geez, that watercolor is just—I don't know what's going on.
I love it.
Oof.
The manga manga splaining coloring update.
Well, it's like you know, there's no color choices there. It's just—it's very random. It's very basic watercolor that doesn't actually use the medium of watercolor to to what it's supposed to be for, to any effect. And then it's pencil crayon over top of it in such a super basic
way. I think that's watercolor pencils. I think that those are watercolor pencils without water applied to them. Like,
I think. I mean, it could be that's almost that's almost the same as pencil crayon, but like.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just. Whew. Oh, I forgot about this.
For like a classic, like monster movie poster approach.
Yeah,
but I don't know if they hit the mark necessarily.
But it seems very light and bright, charming. Which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's accomplished in any way, and I'm with Chip on that, but I think it's charming. I actually really like it for not being very good.
Oh.
Because it's so, like, imagine this was the cover of the book, because it looks like it could have been at one point. Like, that's fucking weird. Like, that would be like, this is actually what is going on with this weird-ass manga, instead of what is going on with this sexy manga. And I think that's maybe more accurate. I will say I actually really liked the first page of art, and I feel like it was all kind of like not quite as good as that first page with the cars and the highway, the faces in shadow, the really excellent use of screen tone on the first page is like to show all these different layers of shadow and reflected light. Really, really good. And the art doesn't like suffer for the rest of it. But that page, I was like, you know what? Everything I thought about this series, I don't think I was right. I think this is a really different kind of book. And then I kept reading. I was like, no, you were right. No, page two ruined it, though. Don't worry. It's fine.
When the eyeball fell into the teacup?
Yeah.
That really got me.
That's really so funny good. That you like page one so much, because I don't.
Why don't you like it? It's so good.
I find it really, really overdone and kind of masking some poor drawing in places. I think the art gets better as the series goes along. I think they definitely put a lot of time into that first page. One. Yeah, okay. I mean, I graduated from art school, so we can just go with my take on it. But anyways.
So we've established this series goes on for quite a while, despite being pretty episodic and kind of just having like the gross twist as a storytelling format. So Chip, you said something interesting earlier that you thought the main character was really fascinating. Yeah. And I think she definitely brings the series together. And it's partly why we can, you know, follow kind of like a one-note joke to the end.
Yeah.
Because she's very pure, I think. Like, there's times when she gets mad, like when the guy makes the weird porno out of her, when justice tends to follow in her wake, whether she realizes it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's really something interesting about that, because you can tell, like, oh, whoever has bad things happen to them in this book probably had it coming. Like the kids with the cosmetic surgery, like they're probably gonna have a bad time, you know, in the workforce, but they're happy. Like no one's like, wow, I really regret getting horns implanted into my head.
Yeah.
Or the guy who suddenly has like a bulky body and he's like, oh, like I feel really hot now. Like she's helping people self-actualize almost.
That's a nice way of putting it, I guess.
That's really beautiful, David.
I'm glad you can see the upside of this.
Yeah, I try really hard.
He's try helping to see them, the best in people. He's helping them self-actualize and then meet their grisly deaths for the most part.
Yeah.
Man. Oof. I was worried this episode was going to be me against all three of you, but I'm glad this turned out much more even.
Yeah.
I feel like you made me go first so Chip would switch sides halfway through. There's no way. Chip, say you like this. Just say, I actually really liked that and I recommend it. And I will concede.
No,
concede
I mean,
everything.
I think I feel the same way that you do, Chris, where this is for a very specific type of reader, and I'm not necessarily that reader, but I can appreciate the level of skill put into this and the interesting procedural and aspects and the twists. So basically, if you are some sort of twisted sick fuck who gets off on gore and a bit of boob like David's dear friend Christine, then this book is for you. Congratulations. I'm not upset that it's not in print.
I'm just upset that all the volumes are out so we can't use that as a pull quote, because that was that would sell some books, man.
I mean
maybe they'll license the sequel. Maybe we could go on the sequel.
I will say, as a book where I read through it pretty quickly because, again, because of the episodic feel to it, And when I finished, I was like, oh, yeah, that was fine. And the more I think about it, the more I'm realizing, oh, there are actually some pretty interesting, cool parts to it. Yeah, which tends to happen, I find, with the manga-splaining picks, where even if I initially kind of bounce off of it, like the picks that everyone here has put in front of me are of a high enough quality that even if I don't necessarily love it, I can respect it. And so, yeah, I respect this book. I denounce it, and I recommend it. There you go.
Read this sick filth.
Let's bring Christina. You've been waiting for this all your life. Here it is.
Let's bring Christina to defend this book.
Yeah, Chris, tell me your final thoughts on Frank and Fran.
I think it is interesting to hear everyone else talk about it, because I don't think anyone's wrong. I think it's all there, all the stuff you're saying. I just think it's... I don't know. I only read the first volume, and maybe if you keep reading, you start to see it pick up a little bit, but it doesn't feel... it feels like the work of a young artist, and I'm kind of cool with that. Like, I'm kind of cool with people throwing stuff against the wall to see what works, you know what I mean, and develop and stuff like that. I think that that's actually super important. I also... don't want to read anymore. So, like, I will never know if Frankenfrenatic, which is the Frankenfrantic, sorry, which is the sequel, is actually better.
Great title.
Or not. Franken, yeah. Well. But yeah, I'm glad to know that this exists, because I've always thought that there's a manga for everybody. And this is a manga that is for somebody. It's not for me. And that's okay, too.
That's
like
fair.
A gateway drug to Eroguro manga. Yeah. Deb, what's your final thoughts?
Well, I will say as a preface that I'm not a huge horror fan. And the type of horror that I generally, you know, even in movies, the kind of horror that I generally gravitate towards is more supernatural, like Poltergeist or... Blair Witch Project, where it's like supernatural, strange things happen versus blood and gore and dismemberment kind of horror. But I respect that it, when you read that type of horror, it does evoke a reaction, you know? And some people really like that kind of like sense of, whoa, what is that? Or like, oh, am I shocked? Or, oh, I'm horrified. It sets off these, whatever, I want to say endorphins, but I don't know what. But it just kind of like, some people who like that kind of horror find this really interesting and satisfying to read. I'm not one of those. Like MPD Psycho is very interesting, but the gross out parts of it made me like, oh, I can't read any more of this. But I think I'm glad we are spotlighting this book, because I hope that in some way we are helping it find its readers that it didn't find in its print run. And I think
I can live with that.
There are horror fans out there who like, oh, I didn't know this book was actually like this, and I think I want to check it out.
That sounds good.
I do like that the three of us are actively trying to distance ourselves from the book. Like, this is not for me. I don't want anyone to think that this is me. David, are you going to read more? Have you read more?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to read more. I'm going to finish the series. Yeah. I love how all of you were also like, I respect this sick filth.
I respect the surprises. I've read a lot of manga, and sometimes when you read a story, you think, oh, I can see this ending coming a mile away. There were a lot of moments when I'm reading Frank and Fran where I turn the next page and go, whoa, hell.
Yeah. Even if like you see the ending coming, you don't see the way that it's coming. It's from an all new horrible direction.
I feel like Chris respecting the sick filth makes a lot of sense, because he was a bookseller. And I think to be a bookseller, you have to be able to sell books that you yourself would not necessarily read, but you have to respect the book enough to put it in somebody's hand.
And Christine actually is really good at that, too. She did some work around, I guess, while I was technically at The Beguiling, too. And she, when she knows about something, she can sell it really well. So I think I'm amazed that she was like, oh, David, this is for you.
Awesome. Yeah. I need to start a trash manga podcast.
That's amazing.
There you go. That's the Patreon.
Manga explaining right in there. The gutters. That's what we call it.
Oh, man. All right. We're going to take a quick ad and or PSA break, and then we'll be back for more.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we are back from our ad and or PSA break. I guess some people get ads, other people get things they can use in their life to make their life better. I don't know. But we've got another manga blind date, and I'm going to hand it over to Deb and Skedaddle for a little bit.
This segment is brought to you by Viz Media, who sent us this book to check out. It is something that none of us had read before, so we're going to take it on a little blind date to see whether we like it and whether we'd go out on another date with it after we're done reading with it. So this one in particular, we are reading volumes 1 and 2 of a book called Zom 100, Bucket List of the Dead by Haro Aso and Kotaro Takata. So this one is an interesting one. It's basically about a guy who he's just out of college. He gets his dream job and he finds out it's a nightmare. He's working in basically what they call in Japan a black company, which is a very exploitative company that makes you work long hours. And it's just really unfun. Let's put it that way. The boss is a jerk. So 3 years later, after being bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and getting into this job, he is burnt out. He is miserable. So when the zombie apocalypse comes, he thinks, holy shit, I don't have to go to work anymore. And he just suddenly the zombie apocalypse become this excuse for this guy to have the time of his life and to start thinking about, well, now that I've wasted all this time at this crappy job, what do I really want to do with my life before I get turned into a zombie? And that is when he starts writing his bucket list of things he wants to do before, well, the end comes. So let's go around the table and let's see. How about we start with Chris and see what he thinks of this one?
Fine, let's bring it. Let's do it. I love the first volume. I thought it was nearly perfect first volume of a manga. And the second volume I thought was solid, like 7 out of 10. And a couple of the problems with the overall concept maybe snuck in a little bit. But yeah, I was blown away by how much I actually liked this. It's something that I had wanted to read anyway. I was a huge fan of The Walking Dead when the comics were coming out. Like, I bought the first issue off of the newsstands, and I sold it when it got all the way up to $40. And I'm an idiot, and I should have held on to it for longer and sold it for more money. But yeah, I actually really like – I don't mind zombie stuff at all, and I like good zombie stuff, I guess. And this is really good. This uses every single zombie trope that's out there. Sometimes there's fast zombies, and sometimes there's slow zombies. Uses every zombie trope out there to just tell – the story of a guy who can't be defeated by life, by death, by anything. He's gonna do this thing. He's gonna start living. I have so much to say about it, actually, that I'm a little bit worried again, because I do think there's a lot going on sort of just under the surface on this one, in terms of like how people do or don't deal with PTSD that I think is really interesting, and that you start to see little glimmers of as the series goes on. I hope it goes in that direction. I hope we get to see more of that. But yeah, all in all, I actually loved this book. I was so pleasantly surprised, particularly after our last choice. It was kind of a palate cleanser of sorts for me. So yeah, straight up, Zom 100. And it has an awesome cover too, that like pink, beautiful cover with the motorbike. Totally loved it. So yeah, I liked it. Chipper, what did you think?
I also loved it. Going into this super cold, I think really helped. Like, I was so cold that I didn't even see the subtitle of Bucket List.
Oh.
So all I knew was there was zombies involved. So everything about it was a pleasant surprise to me. I thought the opening was amazing. Because again, I didn't know where I was going. So like him getting this job and then kind of realizing that he's not going home. And then just being sucked into this horrible, horrible business. The artist really used large type sentences well to like drive home things. Like there's the point at the beginning when he comes home and he goes, oh, they must be one of those exploitative corporations. Like, it's such a funny joke, just having that really spelled out so large, like on half of a page. The cartooning in it was amazing. Like, the facial expressions, especially on Akira, were top notch. The artist clearly loves drawing expressions. A lot of the humor reminded me of, once again, one of my favorites, Way of the House Husband. God, another shout out to Viz. There you go, Viz. Way of the House Husband. I love it. Like, the intercutting of the scenes of like the zombies outside getting like pelted with like garbage bags, and then him cleaning his apartment. Just like this fast, energetic motion. Like, it kind of reminded me a bit of Shaun of the Dead too, and like Edgar Wright's kind of quick
Shaun
cuts
of the Dead
stuff. There's one of the most beautiful pages I've ever seen in a book that reminded me of Chris so much, which was just Akira, just a close up of him lifting a beer, and it's just glistening, and he's just popping the top and just chugging it. It's so beautiful in a book like this, and just a reminder of like, oh yeah, all these like simple things in the life that that you don't get to do when you're devoted entirely to work. Such a fascinating idea, just being like, oh yeah, it's the apocalypse, great, oh, I can finally kick back and enjoy a beer. You know, the biggest problem in his life is the fact that he ran out of beer and he had to go to the store and get it. He was more upset about that than the zombie apocalypse. I like volume two. I think with Chris, I like volume one more than I like volume two, but the weird kind of like superhero complex that he's working on in volume two is really fascinating, especially myself being a superhero writer and reader. I forget her name in it. They call her Antisocial, I believe.
Shizuka.
Yeah. Her reaction, Shizuka. Her reaction to Akira's attempts to be a hero, just kind of poking holes in it. I'm like, oh God, she's like poking holes in me as a superhero writer. I kind of love it. it's always fun to kind of read a book where like the main character is just kind of exuberant and freed and just like living their best life, and the setting, the backdrop really kind of highlights it even more so. My only kind of critique of it really is, you know, hey, similar to our previous pick, Frankenfran, just too many boobs. Like every female zombie for some reason is in her underwear, and I'm just like, okay, I get it, but at some point it kind of detracts from the story a little bit.
But they do play it for laughs. Like, there's that moment where he goes to see his work crush, and then she gets turned into a zombie, and then he's like, well, so, you know, goodbye my first love, but at least I got to see your tits.
I know, it's like it's that line of like, is it too gross or is it just within this character's kind of personality?
I think that's just how dudes are, you know, like, well, I'm like, he is not well, but he's like, well, I guess the girl I loved is dead, but you know, I got to see her boobs, that was pretty good. Like, on to the next adventure. And it's like, that'll tell you right away when that happens at the end of the first chapter, whether or not this book is for you, because that is, it's not exactly a pattern, but it's definitely like sums up that first, that first chapter is so good in that it sums up what the series is. And it's the kind of thing where like, you're going to know if you're going to bounce off of this or not, because he doesn't, at least in through two volumes, he doesn't change. I think he grows a little bit as he starts to realize different things, but he's also got that, he's such a shonen protagonist, which is weird because this is such a seinen thing. Because when she calls him out on being a superhero at the end of the second chapter, or at the end of the second book, he's just like, but I like you. Why wouldn't I try to save you? Like, maybe we could be friends. And you're just like, oh, that is like a pure-hearted shonen moment in this like grisly boob fest manga situation, which is still great. And sorry, Deb, what did you think?
Oh, I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, kind of similar to Frankenfriend, right? Because there's horror, there's zombies, but there's some weird dark humor in there. And sometimes that those flashes of weird dark humor catch you off guard, and it makes it kind of charming. Like, there's the part where he rolls into Shinjuku that's crawling with zombies, and he's on his Harley that he stole. And then he says, well, Shinjuku's packed. No surprise there. it's full of these little deadpan moments that it's like, hey, you know,
so good.
Here we are in our little zombie-free thing, and I feel like I need a widescreen TV. Let's go to Ikebukuro and steal one, you know? So there's all kinds of like weird little moments that just kind of, it's dark in some parts and there's gory some parts, but there's like moments of like weird humor. So it's kind of an enjoyable book that way, because it laughs at itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's maybe there's a little bit of Zombieland there as well. And there's a whole lot of Edgar Wright, I think.
Yeah.
Shaun of the Dead in this, about the like wage slave who gets to come to life and change his life because the zombie apocalypse makes his old life obsolete now. But I think it goes in very different ways, which I think is really interesting. But it definitely, the person who's writing this has watched a lot of zombie media and is very aware of what's going on, which I think is really cool. I think there's a little bit of a treat there for folks who are already fans of that kind of material. Well, sir, here's the other question. Do you think that there's enough in here for people who are burnt out on zombies? Because I think, you know, Chip, you mentioned going in cold and you barely knew it was about zombies. I think people feel a little bit burnt out on zombie stories.
I mean, it's such a fun take on it. Like the zombies, like any proper good zombie story, is not about the zombies, right? This isn't a survivalist story. It's a live your best life story, which is a very different thing. You know, they're not scrounging. He just has to go to the store for a beer and he wants to steal a widescreen TV.
Yeah, it's very lighthearted and compared to say like I Am a Hero or even Walking Dead. It's like Walking Dead is a very American zombie story because it's like things are going to go to shit. Are you prepared? Do you have enough canned goods? Do you have a gun?
I never really thought of it as being an American thing, but yeah, I guess that is.
And then like you know, like I Am a Hero is like, hey, you know, there's zombies in Japan, but there are no guns except I have a gun. And I am therefore the only one who's going to survive. This one is like, there's no guns. It's just like, well, I just happen to not give a shit. And I'm, and I don't care.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me just ask you this, because this is the point of it. Now that you've been on your first date with Psalm 100, would you go on a second? Would you read volume 3?
Yeah, absolutely. I would read volume 3, no problem. It comes out, I was just actually checking and it's not out for another month or two, coming out in August. But yeah, it was 1 and 2 were both so good. It gave me like real nice feels. Oh, that's who he reminds me of. He reminds me of Fry.
Oh,
Philip J. Fry, where it's just like, just crazy shit happens to him. And he just is like, well, I guess this is what we're doing now. And just you go through it. And if I want to see more of what that looks like in the next couple of, I mean, I watched every Futurama twice, so yeah,
I want to see more. Also, just I also have to mention, I really like his hunky best friend too,
who's always naked somehow.
yeah, a little bit of eye candy. Eh. I would definitely read volume 3. yeah, because I think it definitely there's a story there, right? Like we're seeing these characters actually progress. So I want to be able to follow them and see where they go.
Volume 53 should be interesting because at that point they're leaving Tokyo and they're going to Gunma to visit his parents. Because that's also on his bucket list. So that should be cool. I also want to mention that Haro Aso, the author of this book, also did Alice in Borderland, which is on Netflix now.
He's actually did Hide and Closer or Hide and Closer.
Closer.
How you pronounce that one. Yeah, and that was of his book from way back that came out. Alice in Borderland, unfortunately, the manga isn't out, but it's huge on Netflix. Like, it did really, really well as a Japanese mystery. So, yeah, I think this is the timing couldn't be better for a book like this.
All right. That was our manga blind date with Zom 100, Volume 1 and 2 by Haro Aso and Kotaro Takata. It's available now from Viz Media in print and digital. Go to bit.ly/Zom100podcast to read a free preview.
You know what I like about these segments?
Huh?
What do you like about these segments?
I finally know how it feels to be a Among Explaining listener.
Oh.
And our fans are so blessed.
That is very kind.
Except we're missing a key ingredient.
Mm. Oh, the music.
Yeah, you.
Yeah.
I'm a little sad about that, actually.
Yeah, it's complicated, I suppose. I have to call Chris's bluff on one point, though. Mm. Did you watch the Futurama with the dog twice?
Yeah, I actually did.
Wow. I watched it once in college, and I was like, that's enough. That's like Requiem for a Dream level painful.
The one with the dog and then the one where Fry, not that quite that for me, but I feel it for you. But the one where Fry is revealed to have been Lars all along, that's the other one that people are like, you watched that twice? And it's like, honestly, I just got really into the lore and stuff like that. So I wanted to rewatch it because they go back to all those things so many times that I wanted to like make sure I was getting the background details and the Easter eggs and all that kind of shit. But yeah, it's rough. That episode is really, really tough, but it's such a good, man, it's such a good, even the stuff that isn't good is good. It's not like Simpsons where it's like, there's a precipitous drop off. It's like the stuff that's not as good and the sort of some of the later Futurama stuff is still awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I didn't realize why I liked Akira so much while we were reading that book. And I was like, oh, he's literally just Fry. Like he's literally
connection.
Like,
I think that's
he rolls with the craziest punch and just keeps going and is like, here's what I want to do. I've always wanted to live somewhere else or have no whatever responsibilities. But yeah, the PTSD that he's in, like he's clearly like just gone. Like there's no way that you can watch the girl that you like get mauled next to you and be like, fine, the next chapter. Part of that's manga, but I'm really hoping part of it is that they dig in a little bit to what's going on with these characters and how they can survive all these tragedies, because it would, you know, fuck up any of us, right? To see these things. And like Yona of the Dawn is what I keep going back to, where it was just like, that might've even been too much for manga. Like it was too realistic the way that she was dealing with all of her shit. But this is just like, yeah, I guess if it's Fry, like you kind of get over it. You know what I mean? Like, and you could just keep watching anyway. I have no idea. Is this going to make it in or not?
Is
this
just like going in.
Your capriciousness?
I mean, this is a teaser for our Graining-splaining up podcast.
Nice. Wow. That's the second podcast you launched this week. It's going to be a busy week. It's a busy times ahead.
Deb, you have shout outs. You have license announcements. What can you tell us that's good in the world of manga today?
Oh, well, today was a good day for manga licensing announcements. I was really excited to hear that Witches by Daisuke Igarashi is coming out, I think early next year from Seven Seas. Daisuke Igarashi did Children of the Sea, and he does beautiful, beautiful books.
It's awesome.
It sounds like a really interesting book about witches and revenge. I'm not too sure about it, but I know he does very, very stylish work that is very kind of mystical in nature. I think it's worth checking out. I'm really glad that Seven Seas is putting out some of these books with all that fat, fat monster Musume money.
I'm actually a huge fan of Daisuke Igarashi. Actually, Children of the Sea is the book that I keep going back to, like wanting to recommend on the podcast, but it's 5 volumes and you can kind of get a bit of it from the first volume, but it's really something you have to read the whole thing of. It's kind of like Pluto in that way, but it's not nearly as well regarded for whatever reason. But Igarashi is amazing. And the fact that we get more Igarashi is so awesome. I'm so psyched.
Yeah.
So stoked when about that.
Children of the Sea came up on the podcast earlier this season. I think we talked about how like he just really loves drawing sea animals and really detailed drawings of sea animals. But the entire book is almost like it's kind of described as a vibe, I guess, to where you just sit in this world and you just kind of float. And it's very pleasant. So I'm really excited for Witches. I think that's pretty cool.
Chip, do you have any shout-outs?
I guess my shout-out is to episodes 2 and 3 of Monthly Girls Nozaki-kun.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think of the anime?
Well, I mean, I went on record as saying I did not care for the first episode, but I was told to go back and keep going, and I did, and I quite liked it. So
sweet.
I overcame my internal prejudices against anime.
People were really excited for that episode, too. That's cool.
Yeah, I think, again, it was like reading the manga before the anime, I think, ruined the anime a little bit for me. Because I already have those jokes in my head a specific way. So I found watching more episodes in which it kind of like deviates a little bit and has extra jokes in there that I wasn't expecting made it a better experience. So that's my shout out.
Nice. Cool. Mm-hmm. And Chris?
I was just checking and I'll go with Deb's shout outs as being my shout outs. Nice. I think they were good shout outs. I was just going through and actually there's another Seven Seas book that got announced a little while ago, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, called Robo Sapiens. And this actually won a bunch of awards in Japan last year. It looks kind of like a cross between what people think of as manga, but also like North American alt comics, like a really like a Chris Wary kind of really clean style. And it's about a world in which humans no longer exist, but the robots that are there are patterned after humans. And it's about sort of discovering what humanity is by discovering what humanity was, like the kind of best of sci-fi. So yeah, it's coming out in November. Yeah. And it spans a bunch of time too, which is really interesting. Anyway, I'm very excited about it.
I looked it up while you were talking, and Brutus Magazine listed Robo Sapiens on their most dangerous manga lists, which included parts of the most stimulating and thought-provoking themes. So I'm in.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. And do you have shout-outs this week, David?
Less of a shout-out, more of a tutorial, which is something you would love to hear at a comic convention panel Q&A line. So we've talked a lot about George Morikawa's Hajime no Ippo. Like, it's actually brought our group together a little bit. Chris, Deb, Chip. I didn't just forget your name. I was trying to make the next sentence in my head. And Nick Dragata all went to an exhibit showcasing this artwork. And it's finally available digitally, 131 volumes of Hajime no Ippo, this amazing boxing manga, in Japanese. So there's still no news on it being published in English, but you can buy it in Japanese from North America, and it's very easy. So bookwalker.jp is an online bookseller. We don't get affiliate links or anything, so I don't think this is too shady. But go there, type in Hajime no Ippo in Japanese. You can get the Japanese title from the Wikipedia page, and it will pull up all 131 volumes. You can buy them with a credit card. PayPal doesn't work. Then you can install the Bookwalker app on your whatever tablet you prefer to use, and then you can read these amazing boxing manga basically for $5 a volume, which is a steal for art that good. If you want someplace to start, like the stretch from, I think, volumes 59, 60, and 61 are a pretty good fight. And I don't know, like Ippo rules. Go check it out, buy the Blu-rays, and please someone license this so I can read it in English.
Bookwalker gives you volume 1 to 3 free.
Oh yeah, volumes 1 to 3 are free, yeah, which is fantastic. That's already like 600 pages.
Only a manga would somebody suggest starting at volume 59.
That's halfway through the series, you know, not too far.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to say, like, if you've been reading Hajime no Ippo as a scan, this is a nice way for you to throw some money back at the original creator.
Definitely.
So yeah.
$5 a volume, it's a steal. Almost literally a steal.
And I'm assuming, too, like, if enough people buy this, then there'll be more of an interest in an English translation.
I think so. If they notice, like, wow, like a bunch of people from the U.S. are buying this, maybe a little grassroots thing going on.
Well, maybe it'll get the manga-splaining bump.
Yes. And on that note, that has been this episode of Manga Splaining featuring Frank and Fran, Zom 100, and all the other random manga and TV shows that we mentioned over the course of the episode. On behalf of Chip, Deb, and Chris, I am David, and thank you for listening. This has been Manga Splaining, episode 24. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, we'll be discussing the manga Akira, Volume 2, by Katsuhiro Otomo. Want to pick up a copy? Consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop. Find one near you at comicshoplocator.com. You can also follow along with our complete reading list at mangasplaining.com. Thanks to DADS for their musical accompaniment this episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.